Let me say briefly, by the way, of something about emperors. The emperor is the emperor of Germany, it turns out. This is important because Luther is living under an emperor. He is officially the Holy Roman Emperor, but he lives in Germany. He's more or less the elected monarch of Germany, but the real powers in Germany are local princes. He's not really a king, and therefore he doesn't have the kind of power of a king. He has to work through these elected princes, and that'll be an important feature of the politics in Luther's time. Luther himself is always on the emperor's side when he reads medieval history, which is full of these conflicts between the emperor in Germany and the pope down in Italy. The emperor invades Rome and all that sort of stuff. Luther's always on the side of the emperor. Now, because the papacy is powerful, it becomes a bone of contention in power politics. As I mentioned before, in the early 14th century, right after Boniface VIII, the papacy gets moved to Avignon, which is in France, under the shadow of the King of France. Very convenient for the King of France, inconvenient for the emperor in Germany. This is described by medieval writers as a Babylonian captivity, like the captivity of ancient Israel in the Bible, going off to Babylon, leaving their lands. The pope belongs in Rome, but he's off in Avignon, captive. That becomes an important theme. It gets worse, though. Late in the 14th century, there's the Great Schism. A pope comes back to Rome, and another pope stays in Avignon, and we've got two rival popes. Each excommunicates the followers of the other, puts their lands under interdict, right? In this interdict where no one gets the sacraments. So if you're with one king, then you're with this one pope, and the other pope is saying that your sacraments are not valid and you're going to hell. And if you're with the other king, there's the other pope saying you're going to hell. Which side do you want to be on? Which side is safe? How do you get salvation in a situation like that? It really undermines your confidence in the church, and it makes you terribly anxious about your own salvation. Very bad news. Well, how do you solve a situation like that? At one point, there were actually three popes, not just two. And at the beginning of the 15th century, there's a church council that's held called the Council of Constance, which deposes all three popes and then puts a new pope in its place and finally solves the issue. And that became actually a basis for one version of the theology of the church, thinking that maybe the church, the pope, ought to be under the authority of a council. The popes didn't like that, and they won, because the next feature of the history of the papacy is the Renaissance papacy. The popes got out from under the power of the councils. They built. They got wealthy. They fought wars. One of them was the warrior pope, Julius II, who's the same guy who commissioned the paintings of the Sistine Chapel by Michelangelo. He was wealthy. He was powerful. He was terrifying. They called him Il Terribile, the terrifying. His uncle, Sixtus IV, after whom the Sistine Chapel was named, was involved in a conspiracy to murder the Medicis. Yes, those Medicis, the Medicis in Florence. He got one of them killed. The other one was Lorenzo the Magnificent, whose son Leo became pope when Luther was trying to reform the church. Very complex. Italian family politics played a huge role. Money being given to nephews and illegitimate sons, like Caesar Borgia, the son of the Borgia pope Alexander IV. There's money. The Renaissance papacy is awash with money. They sell offices in the bureaucracy at Rome, right? You buy a place as some kind of Roman official. You don't have any work to do, but you get the income from all sorts of benefices. Money is flowing into Rome. A lot of it is flowing into Rome from Germany. That's going to be a big issue for Luther. Luther, in fact, visits Rome in 1510 under Julius II, the warrior pope, the one who is commissioning the Sistine Chapel for Michelangelo. He's only an unknown priest at this point. In 1510, it's long before the 95 Theses. Nobody knows who Luther is. He's just an unknown monk from Germany visiting Italy. And he finds it worldly, cynical, atheistic. Italian priests don't believe the gospel. They don't believe anything. They're just in it for the money. And their word for a fool is a good Christian, Luther remembers. He's shocked by these people. They keep the prostitutes in the red light district very busy. They all have mistresses or prostitutes or both. Many of them have children, of course. And in this environment, Luther's trying to make a special pilgrimage to seek the grace of God for his relatives in purgatory. For his grandfather, who he assumes is in purgatory, he climbs the sacred steps on his knees, one step at a time, These are the steps that were supposedly at the house of Pilate, where Jesus Christ was on trial. Move to Rome. You climb up this on your knees, one step at a time, saying the Lord's Prayer each step. And at the end, your grandfather's soul is supposed to be released from purgatory. Luther recalls that later that when he got to the top of the stairs, he asked himself,